You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, we live. Today I have one of my superheroes here, Rafael, my Xará, right? That's how we say it in Brazil. Xará is like when we have the same name.
So yeah, that's right.
Rafael Lovato.
I have the F.
It sounds the same. How's it going, my brother? Thank you so much for your time and for coming here. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's going very well. I love your room there.
Thanks,
that
man.
That looks awesome.
Awesome. Thank you. So look, let's start. I got a bunch of things I want to talk about. First, let's start with this craziness. I just saw you open your new school, like a new location. Looks gorgeous. Congrats.
Thank you.
I was surprised I learned yesterday you're in Oklahoma. I'm such a knucklehead. I didn't pay attention to it. I always thought you were in California for some, I don't know, everybody's either California or like Florida, the
right.
Fighters I know and stuff. So how's life in the country? And it's awesome there, right? Like it's such a quiet place.
Yeah, you know, I love Oklahoma. Oklahoma City is like, you know, it's a pretty big city. You can get a lot of the pros of of being in a big city without the cons of traffic and it being super expensive and all that kind of stuff. Of course, we don't have a beach. You know, the weather can get a little crazy.
Yeah.
But the people are extremely friendly here, you know, very down to earth, kind of Southern hospitality style.
Yeah.
And you know, this is where my, you know, like all my friends and my roots are here. And I never wanted to leave. Just carry on the work that my dad started here long time ago. You know, in this kind of time, it's actually been very nice to be here because we haven't gotten hit, you know, that hard. Obviously, you know, everyone's been going through things in their own way with the pandemic. I think, you know, being in the middle of the country in a city where it's not people on top of people on top of people, it kind of was a little more mild than what it would have been.
Plus, it's not like a bridge for people to get somewhere else, like New York, right? Like
everybody
stops in New York to go somewhere. So I think that what caused the pandemic to get to the level here. Oklahoma, you're in a pretty mild.
And it's so spaced out. Like everyone has their house with a yard. Like there's a lot of room. So, you know, you can be stuck in your house, but still have like a decent amount of space, you know? And so for me, you know, it's definitely hard. Like you said, I just moved into a new academy and we had our grand opening the last week of February.
Yeah, I was going to say like a couple of months ago, right? I follow you on Instagram and I saw it and the space looked, I think you posted like a picture with the students or something like from the air, almost like a drone shot kind of thing. It looks gorgeous, and I was thinking all of that, like the new building, new everything, new bills, and then everything gets shut down, right?
Yeah, tell me about it. That was definitely the hardest part. It was, you know, such a goal and a dream of mine for a long time to upgrade our space. And basically, you know, get my dream school. I'm in here right now. This is my office. I mean, that shot that you're talking about, that's from my window.
Wow, see, look at that.
There's the school right
That's a good looking
window for my
school,
for my office.
Congrats, brother. It looks beautiful.
Thank you. But less than 2 weeks after our grand opening, you know, I had to shut it down. And that was 100% the hardest part of the whole quarantine, you know, was just accepting that. And it bummed me out pretty hard the first couple of weeks. You know, in the midst of difficulty always lies opportunity. And since that first couple of weeks, I've been able to find a really good rhythm and have launched a couple of new projects and have been very productive. And now we're almost out of it. So,
we're doing okay. You're supposed to be opening up in, what is it, a couple of weeks? Some states are coming back strong, right?
Yeah, in a couple of weeks.
I heard California was going to open up. Now it looks like they don't. It's like some uncertainty going there. I don't think there's anything going on in the near future for New York. We're probably looking for another month or so. But what is there anything you can share on the projects? You're going like online videos and stuff like that?
A couple different things. I mean, I have like been so busy and traveling for so much of my life. This is actually the longest period that I've been at home consecutively in probably 15 years.
Competing and
there's always something. Seminars, training, teaching, competing, coaching, there's always something. So it gave me a chance to really just get organized and kind of reflect and think about the next plan. I've been doing a couple things. I started a Facebook group first off to just connect to, the community and my fans, people that love to learn from me. And I've been doing live classes for them.
You posted a message yesterday, I think, talking about that. Free for everyone. Everyone can join.
Yeah.
And stuff. I'm going to join. I'm not a crazy Facebook guy. We have a Facebook page and I have a Facebook page. I just don't use it as well. I think it's so... I'm pretty good with technology and stuff, but I think Facebook is so complicated.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Navigate through the groups and stuff. It's very complicated. It's so like Instagram. Yeah. It's so much simpler. But I'm gonna like the page and I'm gonna keep an eye on it because I've been watching like. It's like a live fever right now, right? So it's
right.
This, believe it or not, hurt me a lot because I had a bunch of people like lined up to come to the podcast and stuff. Like, you were wearing like a Everyday Porrada shirt. I had Romulo like ready to come here, and then he was like, "Hey, my brother," it's like, there's so many people asking for lives and stuff like that. Do you mind if we hold off a bit? I was like, of course, man. Don't worry. It got a little crazy, right?
It's, yeah.
Like everything we do is like, I mean, it gets a little out of... But I think it gets a little out of control because everybody is doing a live and they keep like nagging you. It's like, hey, like just you. Like how many requests you get for like, hey, let's do something. Let's record a live. Yeah. Let's do a... It's crazy.
But it's definitely sparked, creativity and people connecting with each other, so it's been cool to see. Like I said, I had this group, now people are talking to me, asking me questions, and I'm filming stuff for them, and I've gone in and I've organized all my hard drives of footage and videos, and I've been trying to release old footage of guys like, Lucas Lepre and Andre Galval and different greats competing back when they were purple belts, or brown belts. I have so much footage, and so I've been doing some of that.
You used to record like the competitions that you were in.
Every time
like?
I went to Brazil, I always recorded as much as I could.
Oh, that's nice.
Back in the day, so I have some pretty cool stuff.
That's nice. Were you the first American to win a Brazilian national in jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, the first non-Brazilian, first gringo.
The first gringo, the first American, right? Yeah, I think here you were the second one, just behind BJ Penn, right? To win
for the world championships.
So what? Yes. Not putting you on the spot, but what means more, like the awards or winning a Brazilian nationals in Brazil against like probably like 100% the Brazilian crowd, right?
Yeah. It's hard to do that. It's hard to compare.
Yeah.
All the moments, you're at a different place in your life and everything means something different to you. I definitely like growing up competing in Brazil, there's a special place in my heart for Brazil in general, and I always love the energy of, fighting there. And since my world title,
as raw as you can get, right? Going there. I'm from 100%. São Paulo, and it's like the you see the schools here. It's like, oh my god, this is like paradise compared to where, right?
Yeah, the Tijuca Tennis Club in Rio is Very raw. Very, very raw.
And that's probably like a very nice place too.
Yeah.
Because but, Tijuca is a nice neighborhood in Rio too. It's right? So it's like...
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, my world title was in the very first Worlds that took place in the U.S. And so...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I missed the opportunity to win a world title in Brazil. And so definitely my Brasileiro titles, I have two. I have one for the weight class and I also have the Absolute.
The Absolute in 2013.
Yes. And so those are definitely titles that I really cherish because I always dreamed of being a champion in Brazil. And, you know, and back in the day, the Brasileiro was arguably, you know, even more difficult than the Worlds.
Yeah.
Because everyone had to fight for their spot. And a lot of people, you know, didn't qualify to compete at the Worlds. And so
many people, I imagine, like they won't have like means to get to the
right,
to the
right.
World, like visa issues and stuff like that. So
yeah, for sure.
You get a bunch of like the Brazilians competing there. It's pretty, it gotta be pretty. How much time you spent in Brazil in at that time? Like you actually, did you ever live there for a while or you just go and travel and compete?
The most consecutive time I stayed in Brazil, in 2004, I went for 2 months, came home for like 2 weeks, and then went again for 2 more months.
Oh, cool.
And that was just like 100% focus. I competed a lot. I was training. I was a brown belt, you know, getting close to the black belt level, and I just wanted to go all in. I actually like... dropped out of college and just took everything I had and went to Brazil.
That's awesome. I think like winning a jiu-jitsu tournament in Brazil, it's like winning a Muay Thai tournament in Thailand or something like
exactly.
that. Right? That's why I ask that stupid question. Say like, what is more important? Because it gotta be like a special thing. Like it's amazing, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Where did you stay there? Like always São Paulo? Because I
no,
heard...
Rio.
Rio? Okay.
Yeah.
Because I heard you were you do some of your camp in Curitiba with
Curitiba.
Yeah.
For jiu-jitsu, I usually always went to Rio and I would train there. And then, of course, the Worlds was held there. The Brasileiro was held there at that time. But then when I would go back, you know, they moved the Brasileiro to Sao Paulo in Barueri.
Yes,
and
I went to college there. Cause it's like
it's beautiful there. That's actually a very nice area.
There's a bunch of closed gate communities around.
Uh-huh.
It's called Alphaville, and
that's where I stayed.
I went to a college right there in that.
Wow!
Just in the middle of the condos and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I know that area very well. I got a bunch of friends there, and
that's pretty
cool.
It's a nice area.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
But I've been a little all over. You know, I've been to Bahia before, of course, you know, Curitiba many, many times for my fight camps. And
did you really enjoy
Curitiba.
Curitiba is beautiful. I never been to Curitiba, believe it or not. But I see, like, it's a beautiful city. How is the entire camp there, or just, like, the last leg of the camp you go to Curitiba?
Yeah, so I call it the Pojada phase is in Curitiba, you know. The hardcore phase is down there. So I usually have like a little bit of a prep, you know, time. So my typical MMA camp would be 10 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I would usually spend the first month or so at home. And you know, kind of building up technically, getting the conditioning, getting the strategy and everything in place. And then by the time I was feeling really good and getting sharp, I would go to Brazil, to Curitiba, and I would stay for anywhere between 2 weeks to a month, or probably 3 weeks average. You know, the more...
Is the, like, the bigger evolution,
the fight,
right?
The longer I would stay.
Evolução?
Evolução Thai with Andre Gida.
Yes.
You know, there it's just like everyone is a Muay Thai specialist. You know, very hardcore, train hard, a lot of hard sparring.
Gida came from Shootbox, right?
Yeah. His brother Mauricio is my head coach.
Okay.
And he's actually one of my black belts. in jiu-jitsu, and I just earned my black belt under him in Muay Thai, nice. In MMA.
Awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
So we have a very close relationship, and Jita as well. I'm very close with him. He's amazing. Just an amazing coach. Like, what the work that he does there with the guys. I mean, people kind of start to see now, but I'm telling you, the Evolução Thai team in Curitiba is, it's becoming the top team in Brazil. Yeah. They're getting guys in all the big shows, a lot of great up and comers. And, just from the small weight classes to the big weight classes, there's talent all over. And so I always enjoyed going there and getting pushed, whatever I need. If I need a southpaw, I need guys that have good hands, a guy that has good kicks, long, short, whatever. There's someone there for every style that I could possibly run into.
Even find good wrestlers in Brazil nowadays, right? There's some good strong guys to do some wrestling
there.
For
sure. Maybe not technical, but they believe
they
and they do it.
They can smash you, right?
yeah,
for sure.
Like I said, it's like the Pojada phase. They spar really hard, which I thought was good for me because not having, I was always fighting guys that had way more fights than me, much more experience than me. And the training at Curitiba really gave me the confidence, basically fighting every day with all these guys. I felt like I leveled up much quicker, and then fighting one person was easy.
Look, anyone has any doubts about how good his strike is, you gotta watch your fight against Gegard Mousasi. It's probably like one of the Hall of Fame strikers that ever compete to MMA, right? So you got all I think we're not even talking your ground game because it's out of this world, but your striking game, it's really, really sharp, and that gets people, because I still think, like, in MMA today, that you still carry that jiu-jitsu thing. It's like, he's a ground guy. He's a jiu-jitsu guy. Don't worry about it. It's like, I don't think there's one single guy, maybe a couple, that cannot stand and bang with anyone nowadays, right? Like, everybody does everything. It's like that thing from, like, the old Pride days or the first 10 or 15 UFC events, it's not existing anymore. It's like everybody strikes, right?
Yeah, 100%. Everyone's good at everything, more or less, nowadays. I believe it's still an advantage to be a specialist in one area.
Oh, for sure.
Because now, I can, like, one of the reasons why I feel like I had good success, even in the stand up, area, in many of my fights is because for sure my opponent was more concerned about not getting to the ground with me.
Yeah, yeah.
And that opens up opportunities on the feet, to let your combinations flow. And then you get to kind of catch them by surprise because they're so worried about one thing. And then, they start to be like, a little, taken aback by okay, wow, he's not scared to throw,
exactly. And the defense to go to take you down, so thank you very much for taking me down, right?
Exactly. that's been the whole strategy of my whole Muay Thai training was to throw everything and not care if they took me down. And if I can get them to somewhat kind of be surprised up here and bring their hands up, well, then that opens up the ability to take down for you, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So how's the, like, undefeated Bellator champion? I followed that. So I start, I knew you through jiu-jitsu, and I followed your Bellator, not all of the fights, the last probably like 3 or 4 fights. Mm-hmm. When you sign up with Onnit, I have a very good relationship with Onnit. Andrew Craig and Aubrey and those guys, like, we're friends. And I was like, and Bellator is getting so good now, right? Like, it was always there, but I don't think he had all this attention. I'm just gonna say attention that it got on the last what 3 or 4 years. It really grew and doubled the size. And I love the entrance of the fighters. I think it's like an old kind of like pride feeling, right? Like you got the giant screen with you on it. You're coming down the ramp, and that's How is it to be like a? I heard the entire podcast you did on Joe Rogan about. We're gonna touch on that a little bit, but it's a world champion against a world class striker. I'm just gonna go with that. Everyone's question: how does it feel, man? It's you gotta be pretty coming from where you came from, and all of that talking. Oh, he's a floor guy, you know, like he's just a ground guy. He doesn't have any strike. That's, people always talk about that, and you go there against the top of the top, and you get it done. It was awesome to see. And the Brazilian community, like everybody cheers for it. It was pretty funny because you posted a video the other day saying like you are the favorite gringo that speaks Portuguese or something like that, right? And I think that's pretty real too, because people loved you there. I was talking to a couple of friends. I say, hey, I got Rafael Lovato. Oh, really? Oh, man, that's awesome. And people really have a special place in their hearts for you over there.
Yeah, well, I feel the same. You know, my whole martial arts journey, it's just been so beautiful. And I've spent so much time in Brazil, you know, first for jiu-jitsu, and then years later, spending a substantial amount of time there in a different city in Curitiba for Muay Thai and MMA. So Brazil has been there for my whole journey. And as far as, you know, competing in MMA, you know, I have a full lifetime of martial arts. My martial arts life started immediately under my father. My father is a lifetime martial artist as well, and he was a Jeet Kune Do instructor. Mm-hmm. You know, he followed Bruce Lee and learned from Bruce Lee's best students, Danny Nosano, Richard Bustillo, incredible martial artists that I got to spend time with just as a child.
That's amazing.
And so, you know, really competing in MMA was just me sort of fulfilling what I felt was like my martial arts destiny. I wasn't just a jiu-jitsu guy ever. You know, I did other martial arts before I ever practiced jiu-jitsu.
You started jiu-jitsu, what, 13, 14?
It was like 12.
Okay.
Yeah, right around 12. But we were learning just in bits and pieces. You know, my father was traveling all the way to California and, you know, getting a little bit of jiu-jitsu.
And then really take it seriously until like you're 16, 17. Because like right now, my daughter does jiu-jitsu. Yeah, she's 8. I mean, she doesn't. Right. She goes on the mats and she runs around and learns a little raspada here and there. But she's not training, right? So it's different than, oh, I did jiu-jitsu, I was 8. And really training and start competing and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I had those roots in JKD, which was really kind of like the first MMA. You know, Bruce Lee's philosophy was so far ahead of his time, and the way that he saw taking bits and pieces from every martial art and putting it together in your own way. And that was really, you know, something that was embedded in me as a child. And so even as I was practicing jiu-jitsu, you know, and coming up in jiu-jitsu, I was still trained Muay Thai a little bit, you know, here and there. And we had, you know, I had students and guys that were fighting MMA, and I would train with them in MMA. And I always knew, I said, you know, one day I have to do it. I have to put myself to the ultimate challenge as a martial artist. But I didn't know that I was going to fall in love with it the way that I did.
Okay.
You know, of course, the adrenaline, the rush of it is indescribable. You know, you can't. No one knows unless they've done it. You know?
And it's so funny. It's so funny you say that, because we just had one with Roger Gracie that and he said exactly that, but the results were different. He goes like, listen. It's not like I planned for it. It's like I'm a Gracie. That's all we do. It's like it was gonna happen eventually because we all fight. But he said like, but I didn't love it. I didn't love it, and you know, like I did it and I insisted. but it was never something I fell in love with. And it hits each one a different way, right?
Yeah, yeah. See, I fell in love with it.
Yeah, no, hey.
I make a joke, you know, the way that it brought all of my favorite people, the ones that I love the most, all of my teachers, my brothers, my father, you know, everybody together for the same mission, you know, a common goal. You know, that was what I really fell in love with, and the journey, the process, the camp, you know, the camp. We would have so much fun. We'd all learn so much. All of us would grow together.
That's
awesome. And you know, everyone is a master in their own craft. They all have busy schedules. They all, you know, like the joke is to get all these guys together, it's either got to be a wedding, a funeral, or a fight. You know, that's the only way.
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, you know, I got to keep this going because I want to keep having fun. And that's how it was. You know, my wrestling coach, my strength and conditioning coach, my, you know, Mauricio, my Muay Thai coach, yeah. Shanji Hibero,
yes.
You know, a legend. That's my brother. You know, like we're all right there connected with each other. Everyone is training with each other. Everyone is learning from each other. Everyone is teaching each other. And I just get to be in the center of it all. And I 100% believe that that's why I was able to progress so fast. Because it's not just me growing. Everyone else was growing individually, and it was coming into me. So it was like substantial growth. You know, Shanji is also a student of Mauricio. He trains Muay Thai.
Uh-huh.
He also is a student of my wrestling coach. My wrestling coach is also one of my black belts. You know, Mauricio is one of my black belts in jiu-jitsu. We're all students of each other. And that's I don't amazing. Think there's ever been another team or another camp that does like that. You know, everyone has a striking coach, and that striking coach may not have anything to do with the jiu-jitsu guy or the ground guy or the wrestling guy. You know what I mean? And so it's very kind of separate and disconnected. And the way that we would all work together, you know, was just so beautiful.
It's almost like a group of friends trying to get you better. And I say, all right, let's get together for like, I don't know, for 8 weeks, 10 weeks, and make sure Rafa gets it done.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, you know, there was so much love inside of that, you know, because they're all people, you know, my dad's my dad, you know, and Shanji and everybody else. I mean, I've been training with these guys for over 10 years, you know, over 10 years, we've all grown up together, you know, so I had the right people to that I trusted, you know, to learn from and, you know, to represent them. That's what it was about. And, my goal was to, you know, put us on the highest stage possible, because I believe so much in the work that we did and I knew that we deserved it. And, it all happened.
This is awesome. And it's nice to see there's none of the bullshit that some regular camps go through, right? The striking coach is like, hey, you got to stand up and bang. And the jiu-jitsu coach, like everyone wants you to use more of whatever they teaching you because it's like an ego thing, right? So you have this brotherhood going on your training camp. There's none of that. Everybody together for the same goal and that goal is you. That gotta be pretty amazing. I have a friend, Borrachinha, the Paulo Costa from from the UFC. He does his camp in Minas in Brazil, and he travels here for wrestling, but he does like 90% of his camp there on his home city. They have the academy there, and it's like just like that. He has his brother is his head coach. And they have like a friend, some friends that come in. He it's not as perfect as yours with all friends. So he brings in different coaches and stuff like that. But everybody working together, and his head coach is his brother. So and he goes like, "There's no ego there. It's my freaking brother. Right. He wants the best for me at 100% of the time. So that and I think that really makes the difference between." You being very successful or you just being like an average fighter that you have your coach stabbing each other in the background. You don't even know. It gets a little crazy too, right?
Yeah. You have to be one. Everyone has to be one. You know?
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Let's Talk what is going on with I heard that I had tears in my eyes with you listening to that Joe Rogan podcast. That was the first time you talked about it, right?
Yes.
So
yeah,
how just go briefly. Unfortunately, Joe Rogan is not as popular in Brazil as I love to. People keep asking me, it's like, who's this guy? I talk about him every podcast, probably. Something I keep saying, like, that's where I'm getting my news nowadays, because you turn on the TV, you just get in panic mode. Yeah. So it's like, I'm trying to avoid that. And I'm getting from podcasts I like, and I like mm-hmm. Joe, it's a pretty like down to earth guy. If it's bullshit, yeah. you call on it. And so I try to get some of my current news from what he's been talking about. So mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. someone that I really admire.
And, yeah, for sure.
And I love, and I can almost see why you chose that platform to go in yeah. and open your heart and talk about the it has nothing to do with fighting, right? It was a different condition that stopped mm-hmm. you from fighting, and it's. Is it yeah. going to be permanent?
Most likely, I've had it since I was born.
Okay.
Yeah. So
and it never showed up on any other test you ever did. That's the weird thing, right?
Well, I've never done a brain exam until then.
Oh.
So,
okay.
The thing was, every fight that I had done prior to the world title fight, was held in a place that didn't require a brain scan, and I've never had any issues. I've never been knocked out, no concussion,
yeah.
no, you know, vision or you know, any issues. I hardly ever even get headaches.
Yeah.
And so I had no reason to ever think that I needed to go get my brain checked out. And for the fight in London, it's required by the European Commission to get a scan. And so I went in just for a routine scan.
Yeah.
Just to check it off the list, you know, so I could be approved to fight. And then, you know, they discovered that I had this condition. And it really just, it hit me super hard, like all at once. I couldn't even really like think about anything else. I couldn't, I was immediately put in a place of unsureness, you know, yeah. like uncertainty. What am I doing? You know, am I just killing myself by getting hit in the head? You know, am
is it gonna make it worse? Is it right?
Right. Like,
yeah.
Right. Am I gonna end up, you know, like, you know, I kept seeing Muhammad Ali in my head. I'm
yes,
like, man,
that's,
you know,
bad,
I want to have my family. I want to see my grandchildren one day, you
yeah,
know, and,
yeah.
All these things were just in my brain, you know, I'm like constantly thinking about it. I'm looking up, you know, horror stories of people that had the same condition as me.
And you didn't even know at the time that was a condition you were born with. You thought it was from the fight, right? Like right
well,
after
as I
you
started
got
seeing doctors they,
yeah well
you know,
but right when you got the first bunch of results no. back from this, I was like, holy shit, what's right?
Yeah I was just googling
oh, and that's the worst doctor you can ever get, man.
Yeah, exactly. And at the same time, I'm right in the middle of the biggest camp for the biggest fight of
yes.
my life, you know, and it was a very, very difficult time,
a
huge, huge struggle to just train and try to stay positive and stay confident. You know, I had to see several doctors before I finally ever found someone to say that it was okay for me to fight.
Yeah.
And
the other problem was that my father's a doctor, my brother's a doctor, and I keep telling them, like, I hate doctors because they are so, especially here, I don't think in Brazil is as bad as here, but they are usually afraid to tell you something because mm-hmm. he's gonna hold me to it at some point. It's like, hey, because my brother is the biggest like down-to-earth doctor I ever talked to. I was like, hey, how is this? He's like, nah, that's nothing. That's bullshit. Don't worry about it. Or he goes like, hey, maybe go check it out kind of thing, you know? But
yeah.
I think what you went through is like, they know what it is. They see what it is, but nobody wants to be open and say, hey, go in. It shouldn't be an issue, but nobody's going to say that.
You know, yeah, I mean, 100%. I'm not normal, you know, and MMA is already risky
mm-hmm.
For anybody. And then you throw in the fact that there is an issue with my brain. There is an extra risk. The hard part is determining how much that extra risk is. Is it a lot or is it a little? And everyone was just leaning towards the side of caution, and they all said no. Until finally, there was a doctor in Curitiba, you know, that is one of the actually the head doctors there. He's a professor from any of the other doctors that I had seen previously. And he finally said, look, it's a very minimal risk. Until you have symptoms or some sort of issues,
if you ever show any of the symptoms, right?
Exactly. He said you should continue. And he wrote the letter, and then I just had to play the waiting game of hoping that the commission would approve me. And so I kept training.
Because
it was all up in the air.
Crazy,
you know?
Right?
I'm still training.
Yeah.
But the fight itself was up in the air. You know, nobody knew if it was going to happen for sure or not until 2 weeks before the fight. Did I finally
get
officially approved? And they said that I could fight. And so, you know, I mentioned on the Joe Rogan podcast, I had this quote that I take this book with me everywhere. And I always read it backstage before the fight. And I opened the book, and you know, I've read it several times, and I have different portions underlined, and the page that I opened it up to had an underlined portion that I saw right away, and it said, every adversity carries with it the seed of an equivalent advantage. And that was the first thing I saw.
Wow.
And at that moment, I knew that we were going to win, because everything that I had went through just to get to the fight was to make me stronger and make me prepared to give my absolute best. And I knew exactly what I was there for. I knew who I was. I knew what I was fighting for. All that was very clear. I had to come to terms with that before I even got to the fight, because I was literally fighting just to get to the fight.
Just to be able to fight, right? Yeah. It's crazy.
And in the end, that's where that fifth round came from.
Wow. Can we look at that? I have it ready to go here. Do you mind?
Sure.
If we watch it together, you okay with that?
Go ahead.
Right.
Yeah. So it was two. I won the first two. He won the second two. And at this point, you know, it's coming down to the fifth round, and the last two rounds did not go.
Can you see it well?
Yeah, I can see.
Okay.
The last two rounds did not go very well for me. And so we touched gloves, and I actually smiled. you know, I looked him in the eyes and smiled. And I just remember Shanji, Mauricio, everyone telling me, one more round for the fight of my life, you know, one more round for my life's work. And I knew I had to go first. I had to pressure him.
And the body language is so clear. Like, you are a lot more comfortable than he is right there. You're like, you lose and you're moving.
And that's what it was, just knowing that this was it.
Yeah,
and that's a
beautiful takedown.
Takedown. I trained a lot. The inside trip. And earlier in the fight, in the third round, I was on his back and I lost the back, and he ended up on top. And Musasi has a very good grounded pound.
Oh
game.
My God, he's one of the best.
Yeah, and that's where I got cut. With an elbow in that third round, and then I couldn't see in the fourth round. So, you know, I had plenty of adversity in the fight as well. But going into the fifth round, when I get into a good position, I didn't make the same mistake twice. I knew how to make the adjustment so I wouldn't land on bottom again. And here I'm just smothering, just putting a lot of pressure.
Uh-huh.
Being heavy, not giving him any space, and you know, working my way through his butterfly guard. He has a very good butterfly guard.
He has a very good ground game too. So
yeah,
it's underrated, but he's
sharp.
He's really
a black belt in jiu-jitsu for sure. Here I use the guillotine to help give a threat. Jacare actually guillotined him, and there was something else that I worked, but he controlled my wrist well. But then I use it to make my way to his back.
Okay, awesome.
And now you see the adjustment with my arm, my right arm under his arm.
Yeah.
that's a way to help make sure I didn't land on bottom again, like I did in the third round. So I made a lot of good adjustments in this fifth round. And, you know, I tried to do some damage with strikes.
And people are going crazy there. Right? Like, ah! The choke is going to get in. It's like, ah! That's...
There was a point where I thought I was going to get him, especially right here. Right here, I thought, oh, I'm going to finish this. I'm going to finish this right here. Yeah. My arm comes around, and I get a fairly decent control, you know, starting to come around his neck, but his chin was in just enough.
And there's some guys who actually tap from the jaw, right? But not Musasi, right?
Yeah, it was hard. It's hard with the gloves to get a full lock of the RNC. You know, the gloves get in the way a lot. So here, here's where I start to get across his face a little bit.
Yeah, but, that's, you know, what I was talking about. Like the elbows,
the,
right?
The gloves. The gloves make it hard. So I just, you know, worked to control position, and I really wanted to finish him. I really wanted that bad. Only very few people have ever finished him.
Yes.
And, I mean, he only has, what, 6 losses.
That's crazy. He's been fighting since, like, I don't know, 1946.
Yeah, over 50 fights. It's, you know, crazy. Like I said, I was a huge, huge underdog. A lot of people won good money on me that day. But this is basically the whole round. It's just me on his back,
controlling his back, and that's where he lost the fight too. Because it's right, like he came back strong on the third and fourth, and I think any other, looking at the judges, any other, like if you just decided to stand and trade punches with him, you risk losing the fight, right? Because he was a very close fight.
Yeah, I didn't want to be on the feet with him at all. Yeah. I never want to do a whole fight on the feet. I mean, that would just be ridiculous to not take advantage of all the jiu-jitsu experience
exactly,
that I have.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
It's like 30 seconds left. And he's probably like, holy shit. It's like, there's nothing he can do to get out of there. So, and you have your corner letting you know the time?
I wasn't close enough. I couldn't hear. I didn't know. I just, man, at that point, like for me, it's, you know, it's tunnel vision. There's a job. There's a man in front of me.
And you look so emotional right there. It's like even like landing the last bunch of punches. Did you know you win this like right away? It's like, I got this.
I didn't know for sure, but I knew that I gave everything I had. And, you know, I could feel that it was 2-2. You know, I wanted to give him my respect there. It was an honor to fight him.
He was very respectful until that. And then after the fight, he started talking about a bunch of shit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Sore loser.
But, you know, I thought it was definitely 3-2 in my favor. My fear was if they happened to give the fourth round a 10-8 round, and it could be a draw. And one judge did do that, but the other two it was a 10-9. You know, he did drop me one time in the fourth round, but he didn't stay on me. There's my father. My father shaking his hand as well. But, you know, he didn't stay on me. He didn't, like, really come close to finishing me. I got right back up. Yeah. And so it was just
that
a 10-9
round.
Doesn't
justify a 10-8. Not at all. Because the 10-8, it like you were closer to a 10-8 on the fifth round than he was on the fourth. Right? Like you were on his back trying to submission, and like he's just laying there with you on his back all the round.
Yeah. I won like around 18 minutes of this 25-minute fight. Yeah. You know, so for me, I definitely felt that I deserved the victory, but you never know when it goes to the judges. And we were in London, and he's, you know, he's European.
Yes,
I had no idea. I had no idea what was going to happen.
I have memories of that Anderson fight against Bisping, People watch the fight. Like, I watched the fight probably like 20 times. I give it to Anderson like 19 out of 20, and they give it to Bisping.
I was so tired, man.
I can see it.
I didn't even want to stand.
But that's important too. Like, you're sitting on the corner, like showing that you wasted, it might change the way that the guy scores the fight too. It's crazy, right? But it shouldn't be like that. But unfortunately, you're dealing with a bunch of the way you look after you finish.
Yeah. Yeah, now just waiting.
That's crazy, right?
Thinking in my head, like, say blue, blue corner, you know.
I think he knows he's lost. He doesn't look.
He's disappointed.
Yeah, you can see by his demeanor and his body language. He's like, oh shit.
Yeah, that was the very first fourth and fifth round I ever did in my career. And my emotion just comes right out.
That's freaking amazing. That is emotional, man.
Yeah. You know, of course, you're going to be emotional no matter what.
No matter what, but going through what you went through, right?
Yeah, what I had to go through, man, it just...
It's like, I got the freaking chills just watching this now. And watching with you is special, too, so...
That is
amazing. Man, what a moment.
Yeah, it gets me, too. That's Mauricio there, Dita's brother. He's the genius. He's the one. He believed ever since the beginning. He knew I could be a world champion even before I did.
And it's good that you say that, because people don't realize some of those guys. I'm even going to say some of those guys from Brazil. Let me see if I can get some sound on this. Hold on. Yeah, I don't know what I did with the... Oh, I know what happened here.
Yeah, I was so emotional. I could barely even put my sentences together.
And you're still being super respectful to him, right? Like, you...
Yeah. That's how my dad taught me to be.
Yeah.
And you see the picture I have right here. I love this picture.
Oh, yeah.
Not just because I'm holding the belt, but because of Mauricio in the back.
Yeah.
You can see his emotion.
And how happy he is for you. And
yeah.
That says everything, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just family. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have made it through everything that I went through. You know, Shanji and Mauricio really, really carried me through that camp, because I was a mess, man. I was crying every day. I couldn't take it.
It's such a pressure to be in a fight like that for anyone, and going through a fight camp for the belt again. And you're not fighting like in a small organization against an upcoming. You're fighting freaking Gegard Mousasi, man. It's already challenging if everything was 100%. I remember you saying you got hurt in Curitiba on a wrestling. So that was that on top of everything. It was the fucking
cherry on top of the
cake of shit that was going on, right?
Yeah. One day I had to get carried out of the academy because my hamstring popped really bad. Oh, man. You know, like I said, the adversity, though, it's what gave me the strength when I needed it most, you know. And that's actually, you know, I'll kind of just throw it out there. You're asking me some of the projects I've been working on. I've actually started writing my book. And
just that story with the camp, with all the... Are you a type of guy who make notes and thoughts and put it on paper? That's it. All you got to do is roll back.
Now I'm putting it all out. I feel like now's the time. And so I've already started working, and it's going to be done by the end of this year.
Are you working with someone?
Yes.
Yeah, because there's some guys, like some black belts that extract the things out of you way to put that in a... Because it's not like, I'm going to write my book. It's like, it doesn't work like that. Right? It's a professional's job too, right? So that's awesome. I can't wait to see it.
I want to use, you know, share my story and hopefully have it help people, you know, impact them and inspire them. And they can take some of the lessons that I've learned in my journey and apply it to their lives in any way. You know, it's not about being a fighter or anything like that. It's just chasing your dreams and, you know, not letting adversity or temporary failures, you know, all these things that we go through. The ups and downs, the questioning where you're like, oh man, is it going to happen? And all these things, you know, I've been through it so much in my life and I feel like I have a bit of a blueprint, you know, that I think others could use, to help them reach their goals as well.
And talking about that, like when you talk about the adversity thing you read in the book, it's like you get in there thinking and say, look, there's nothing you can bring it to me right now that's going to be worse than what I've been going through, right? So that's
exactly
Musashi. Exactly. Had no idea what he was dealing with. He had like a super Lovato there on the octagon with him.
That's right, man. That's amazing. You have to transform into your superhero version of yourself, you know. And that's actually going to be a part of my book is how to do that.
Oh, that's amazing, man. That's amazing. I don't know you, but like in person or anything like that, but I was watching that live when you made it, and I was super like pumped up and emotional for you, like, and I had no idea what was going on. It's just from seeing you, and it was a war or a fight too, so that's why I thought you were so emotional. Like, oh my god, like, he really, you just gotta think like that. We had no idea everything you went through, so we just see that battle against one of the baddest guys, and then you get through it. And then I was like, holy shit, he made it, right? It's like it's freaking amazing, and I was super happy. Then we all got to hear that Joe Rogan podcast, and if there's anyone in Brazil listening to this right now, if your English is good enough, I even think YouTube has like some like real time. It's not 100%, but you can get an idea. Go watch that, because it's like 2-3 hours long, but it's so worth it. It's You break that the whole thing. It's like, oh my god! It's like, no shit! It's like, I didn't know.
Like, Joe was like, so what's going on? I was like, well, should I just start from the beginning?
He knew it, or you told him like
he knew a little bit. Okay. He knew a little bit. We told him. He actually, you know, shout out to Joe. Like, he's such a great guy, big supporter, and you know, after I got denied by the California Commission. And I was just like, man, what am I going to do? You know, I get to the top and now I got to stop. It's just like, I was, you know, just struggling to figure out how to move forward.
Yep.
And you know, at that point, I was telling all my friends and family, everyone's like, hey, when's the rematch? When's the rematch? I thought you already, you know, I had already signed the contract, the bout agreement. Everything was done. I had already started my camp.
Wow.
I'd already been training for the rematch, and you know, whenever we got denied and everything just hit me, I was just like, I didn't know what to do, and I still had all these people asking me, what's up with the fight? What's up with the fight? And I was like, you know what, man,
you got to come forward.
I just need to put it out. Yeah. I just got to put it out for everybody all at once. It's done, and hopefully inside of that, I can create awareness and help others that maybe have the same issue. You know, my thing was just like, everybody needs to get a scan done.
Yep.
Like, you know, we all get checkups, we see the dentist, we get blood work, you know, whatever, like physicals. But how often do you ever think to get a brain scan, you know? Yeah. And you never know, you know? And so
you would imagine that fighters will do this regularly, and they don't, right?
No, and a lot of them are afraid to. Yeah. They're afraid of what they're going to find out.
Yeah, and but that's even, worse, like, right? Like, shit.
I'm lucky because of MMA, because it forced me to get a scan, and now I know. And, of course, I've dealt with my own, you know, struggle with it all, but at the same time, maybe it will prevent something from happening and be the best thing that ever happened to me.
So what is the this thing? Like, is there a treatment? It's a what are the is it something like is it going to grow? How is this? Like, I don't understand.
So there's no treatment. All I can do at this point is get regular scans, you know, once or twice a year and just try to keep up with it. And as soon as I have symptoms, I have to let my doctors know. I have some great doctors that I saw.
Headaches and things like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Seizure is one of the most common ones. You know, vision trouble. Of course, headaches. You know, I just have to stay on top of it. But until I have a symptom or anything like that, there's nothing to do. And once I do have a symptom and there's problems, then the only real treatment is to have surgery and remove the collection of the blood vessels and remove it. But the thing
is a crazy risky surgery too, right?
Yeah. And this disease, I have several, you know, you're born, you know, I most likely was born with it. And there's several locations, and so they can never remove all of them at once. So it's never going to completely go away. Mm. All I can do is just try to keep up with it you know, just live the best life that I can. And
you've been competing the jiu-jitsu, right? Like I saw, like right after your podcast with Rogan, you competed on where'd you compete?
I competed against Cyborg in Florida.
Okay, I'm trying to think if that was the match. Did you do any other competition after that?
No,
that was it. No. That was it. Okay, yeah. I watched.
That's the only thing I've done this year.
Okay,
You know, jiu-jitsu's fine. You know, there were a couple people that said it could be risky getting choked. You know, and the blood.
It's like I don't get choked, so you're good too.
Yeah, I said, well, you know, I do my best to make sure that never really happens, but you know. As long as I can do jiu-jitsu and be on the mats teaching you know, just doing what I love, keep moving and trying to build the next generation and inspire people, you know, life's amazing. I'm grateful for everything.
And there's no studies that says that the MMA will put a greater risk to you, but it's just not to take a chance, right? Kind of thing.
There's no like direct studies. No. And that's why I'm trying to see more doctors. I was lined up to see some doctors in March, but then it all got canceled, you know, when the quarantine came. But, you know, I want to get more information for those out there that maybe have my condition and they can know what's safe and what's not safe. But there is 100% an extra risk. Like I said, the hard part
is... Well, the risk is there already without any conditions, right? So
is it acceptable?
We don't know if we would aggravate the condition, right? The risk is there for sure. You're getting punched in the head, so it's like... let's stay tuned and just hope for the best. It's like, hey, you did... like an amazing body of work in MMA, so it's like it must feel pretty good still. Yeah. Even
I'm man, as long as I had that one fight, you know, with Musashi, that was it. I set out to be a world champion, and I wanted to test myself against one of the best, and he is definitely one of the best of all time.
Oh, for sure,
in that division, I wanted to feel that sort of fight as well, where, you know, that kind of rocky fight where it's back and forth.
Yes.
And you have to dig deep. Like, of course, you kind of wish that every fight will go smooth.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the challenge of it.
The fighter in you wants to be challenged, right?
Yeah. Like, you got to know that you got what it takes, you know, and that was the part that I was most proud of. But, you know, like I said, I couldn't have done it without the people that were behind me in my corner. You know, I was surrounded by so much love. Like I said, they really carried me into that fight. And, you know, it all just came together in a beautiful, beautiful way I'll never, ever, ever forget at all.
It's amazing. All, that picture, man, right there,
you
told me about it. I keep looking at that picture in the back there, and it all... it's all there, right? Like it shows on that picture all of the greatness you achieve. You were on a different level, and it was beautiful.
The greatness we achieved.
Yes, it was beautiful to see everybody achieved something very important that night, and it was amazing.
Thank you,
brother. I'm gonna let you go. I appreciate your time. We like almost an hour in, and I promise you will be quick. So I lied. Sorry.
It's all good. It's all good.
This was a great talk, man. Yeah. Like, listen, again, like I said in the beginning of this, you were one of my heroes. I really admire your work. I'm a big fan, and it's an honor for me to be talking to you today. And just what we did going through the last round, like, it really, really got me the chills watching with you. It was a special moment for me, for sure.
Thank you, Hoff. I appreciate it. It was great to be here. And thank you for all the love and support, everybody in Brazil. Like I said, so much of my life has been in Brazil. And I'm very grateful for it.
Hey, Brazil loves you back, man. The same way we all love you. Trust on that.
Thank you.
So we'll stay in touch. I'll talk to you again just before I put this on the air. But again, my brother, thank you so much. I wish you the best, 100% every time. And where can people follow you? The Facebook group and Instagram and things like that.
Yeah, so
if there's a Brazilian lost in Oklahoma City, where's your gym?
I'm real easy to find. Lovato Junior BJJ, Instagram, Facebook. My Facebook group is LovatoJuniorFans.com, and that'll direct them to the Facebook group. Okay. Just look me up, follow me. I have the YouTube as well. I'm putting all the videos, Lovato Jiu-Jitsu YouTube.
Oh, nice. So what I'm going to do is, like, I'm going to put a link right here on the thing that will pop and people can click and go to your page, right? Right.
Okay.
Right from this video. That's awesome.
Great. I appreciate it.
My brother, thank you so much again. It was an honor and a pleasure.
We'll talk again when I finally get approved for the comeback or awesome. Either the book, the comeback, something like that.
Yes,
I know. We'll talk again.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing. I would love that. Anytime. Doors are open for you all the time.
Thanks, brother.
I appreciate it.
All the best. Take care.